All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the QU Podcast. I'm joined today with Mr. Ralph Oakley. I am, of course, your host, Wyatt Randolph. Today we are going to be getting into Mr. Oakley's career, his influence on media in Quincy, and the influence it's had on him. So let's get right into it. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Wyatt. I appreciate being here, and thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, I'm glad you got to come in on such a busy day.
Well, it's I'm glad to be. Quincy University is an important part of our community and our region, and certainly the communications department's an important part of Quincy University, so I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah, you were an alumni from here, correct?
I am. I graduated in 1980, and which seems like quite a long time ago. It was Quincy College back in
those
days.
Quincy College, of course.
But I guess that makes me, I think I'm a Quincy University graduate because they changed the name, but it was 1980.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, a bunch of our equipment that I've been going through has Quincy College on it, and I've been to the local museum, and I got to see a bunch of the old like uniforms and things like that at the school. So that must have been a very unique time to be a student here.
Well, yeah, I think, too, in the communications area, one of the things to to recognize is the fact that Quincy, although a small community and a rural community, is from a standpoint of media and broadcast is really somewhat a center of the universe with Gates Air here, who makes television and radio transmitters,
right,
and then Broadcast Electronics, which was moved here in 1977. So when it comes to our industry and the things we're doing, Quincy is very much a state-of-the-art place, and Quincy University was certainly, I think, with some of its equipment over the years, the beneficiary of that.
Yeah, of course, we had the radio station, so a lot of good training got through that. And then when that got taken out, we got it replaced with the podcast studio here. So communication students are still able to record and learn the equipment. And we also have the TV studio, so we're able to get that live feeling of giving a broadcast, you know, in the moment. So
yeah, well, I think the communication continues to be important. The platform will always evolve and change. I mean, even if you think about television, for example, but, you know, how is television delivered today? And then you've got streaming and whatever. So, but at the end of the day, people still desire and thirst for information, for news, for entertainment. Mm-hmm. It's just a question of how they're going to get it. Yeah. So it's taking advantage of the technology, but still, we need great storytellers,
yeah,
you know, be it in news or in entertainment.
Yeah. So what drew you to going fully into the media business? Family mainly, or was there another drive?
Well, without going into too much great detail on my family actually came to Quincy in the 1890s in the newspaper business. And then the Lindsay family, who were competitors, came to Quincy as well, and we merged in 1926. So we have a long line of family involved in the business. I really never wanted to do anything other than this.
Yeah.
And so I was very lucky when I was going to Quincy University. I was also working at WGEM TV and radio, and then I went on to work at a station we own in South Bend, Indiana, and then one in Bluefield, West Virginia, and then back to Quincy. So, and we grew the company over the years. But it was something that I always wanted to do, and I think there were a number of reasons I wanted to do it. But I think what I really saw was because of the megaphone we had, being newspaper and TV and radio, that we had the potential, and to a degree very much so, the obligation to provide news, but also be leaders in the community because we could communicate to virtually everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And that all appealed to me from day one. I never felt pressured to do this at all. And I was fifth generation of my family. There were other members in the fourth and the fifth and the sixth generation still, even though we've sold the company. And so it's just, I think, the good that we could do in the community is really what stood out to me.
Right. So you've obviously had a lot of experience in the field. You talked about your family being involved. You've got to see how it's changed over your lifetime. You got to see like the rise of TV and radio over newspaper, I guess,
right,
and then that getting replaced by not really replaced, but the internet came and that threw a wrench into that. So what? When you think back to those different changes in time, what were the biggest obstacles for you?
Well, I don't know that there are any obstacles. It's trying to embrace change, and change is hard to embrace for people and for companies and whatever. But it was at the end of the day, the result is getting to the eyeballs or the ears of those listeners or viewers or whatever they may be. So you have to embrace the technological change that occurs. Mm-hmm. But from a standpoint of, if you look at the evolution, potential damage to traditional media, newspapers were very badly hurt. It's basically decimated the newspaper industry. And the newspaper industry, and I'm speaking very globally now, not to a specific newspaper, they were slow to change. And as a result, the world kind of passed them by.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, you know, the printed newspaper printed goes away. But that's not to say they can't still have the same impact and influence on people online. But that transition was a very slow one. In television remains incredibly popular. But again, it's a delivery. Are you getting it over the air? Are you getting it on cable? Are you getting it on satellite? Are you getting it on streaming?
Yeah.
Again, that's a delivery system. So the trick to being in that business is being sure that you can maintain the economics and the viewership you have while being able to populate these other things and have a smooth transition. It's a little bumpy, but that's really the key to it, is embracing that change. You can't just wake up one day and say, well, everybody's streaming, so I'm going to quit broadcasting over the air, because there goes your money.
Yeah,
and there goes your audience. So you have to figure out a way to transition it. And I think the industry, for the most part, is doing okay with that.
Yeah.
And because they have strong brands, you know, if you have a brand, a WGEM in Quincy or an NBC nationally or whatever it may be, you can probably pull that off. And there are certain economic things that continue to grow. And with technology and some of the things that are happening in television today, there are going to be other ways to deliver data that will be revenue producers for TV stations that won't necessarily involve having an audience.
Okay. So like you said, with newspaper kind of phasing out because they didn't catch up, do you think TV is inevitably just going to be streaming? Is that the next adaptation?
I don't know that it's certainly an adaptation, but whether it's the only one or whatever, I don't necessarily think so. I think there are a lot of different ways. There's no economic cost, for the most part, to a consumer to watch television if he or she wants to watch it over the air. You got to have a TV, obviously, you got to have an antenna,
right?
But there's no ongoing cost to that, and the signal is pristine. So I think to that degree, it's okay. The other part is, because of the ability, the continued growth of one's ability to use the bandwidth, being the producers, the companies that own the TV stations and are licensed to use that bandwidth, with the conversion now of the next generation of digital television, which is called ATSC 3.0, it's going to allow them to have two-way interaction with consumers. Oh. It's going to allow them to pass data for other companies. So all of a sudden, they'll be able to produce revenue that has nothing to do, so to speak, with, you know, producing or broadcasting local news or programming. So. Yeah. So I don't see it all going to streaming. I mean, clearly it's going to continue to grow, and it's growing rapidly.
Yeah.
But I don't think it will be necessarily the death knell. Do I think there'll be printed newspapers 10 years from now? No, I don't. do I think there'll be over-the-air television 10 years? Yes, I do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely – I think it's even more iconic than the newspaper these days, because I know back even when I was a kid, it was – newspapers weren't as big of a deal. Like, my parents had one, but my dad read the sports section, and that was about it. But I know that TV has been a very central part of, like, my family and families that grew up in my generation. So, yeah, I think it will stick around at least until, my kids have kids.
I don't want to minimize the importance of newspapers on a number of fronts. First of all, it was the origin of our company, and I worked in the newspaper business, and I see the value in the broad coverage that newspapers bring. Yeah. Again, it's a delivery system question. Do you have it printed? Do they throw it on your porch, or do you read it online?
Yeah.
having that information online, you know, as you evolve with your life, and, you know, assuming the majority of this audience are college kids, you know, you're going to get married. A lot of you are going to get married. A lot of you are going to have kids. You're going to live in communities. You're going to worry about property taxes. You're going to worry about your kids' schools. And you need to have the information about those things.
Yeah.
And where are you going to get it? Mm-hmm. You know, you can get it, obviously, to a degree from some of your friends and whatever. But you also want impartial sources who cover that. And that's where newspapers have traditionally been far better than any other media, because they go far more into depth on those stories. So the need of the newspaper continues to exist. It's only a question to me of how you're going to get delivered and whether they can afford to do it.
Yeah, I understand that, because here we had a physical newspaper, school paper.
Right.
And
Falcon.
The Falcon, and it got discontinued because of like COVID, and so no one was going to be able to actually physically be there to read it. So it has all been moved to QUmedia.com. And I enjoy it because I am more, I absorb my news a lot through online sources, but I feel like it is harder for students to engage with what's going on, because there isn't that broad, like, here's everything, like news story, all in one thing you can hold in your hand,
right.
And you're not having to like search through it, you know? So I think that a newspaper did make that process a little better in my mind.
Well, being an old guy, I like to think I'm not old, but being an old guy, I still like the idea of turning the pages. Mm-hmm. So I'm still old school on that.
Yeah, I'm definitely like that with the books and things like that. I got to go to the library. I can't no electronic copy for me.
There ever. You go.
Yeah. All right. So I wanted to ask you a question that I've asked multiple guests here, and it's basically, what is the key like memory that you've had during your career? What is the one time that stood out to you? You can remember it like it was yesterday, and just kind of paint that picture for us.
Well, I think I was very lucky over my career to do a lot of different things. You know, mm-hmm. when I started, I worked in radio, I worked in television, I did the weather, I shot film, I did play-by-play of Quincy University sports.
Yeah.
I later sold, so on and so forth. A couple, three memories that stick out to me. One is, I had a chance one time to have a meeting with Rupert Murdoch for two or three hours one day. Oh. And it was just, at that time, I was the number two person in our company. My father ran the company. It was the two of us and Rupert and another guy talking about some business opportunities. And, you know, just given his, regardless of what somebody thinks of his politics one way or the other, you know, he's a very powerful guy in media. And to have the chance, you know, to sit and talk to someone like that was, I mean, that very much sticks out in my mind. But other things do, too. I can remember vividly being in Huntsville, Alabama, and doing the play-by-play when Quincy University won the national championship in soccer.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I remember that well, too. So those are just a couple of them. And, you know, one of the beauties of media is you get a chance to meet a lot of people from all walks of life. And you get to go a lot of different places. But those are just two. But there are, oh, my gosh, I've really thought about, there are dozens, if not hundreds, of great memories.
Yeah, of course. This is a unique field where, since it's telling the truth about what's going on, you do run into these people, these, like, that you never would have expected. Like, I've had guests in here and say that, you know, Bill Clinton came into town, they got to be there and cover it. Or
I got a chance to meet him, too. I remember that when he was here. It was a cold day.
Yeah, kind of like today. It's maybe a little colder then. But those kind of memories where they're like, because if you gave somebody a piece of paper about a radio station, Quincy, they were like, oh, I don't know much about what they've done. But then they're like, yeah, I got a chance to interview Bill Clinton. And then it's like, whoa, I didn't know that could happen. And so the more I've talked with people, the more interesting stories have come out where these big moments in their career just happen.
Well, politicians particularly, people who are in elected office, there's an absolute commonality between elected officials and media, because the constituencies are the same. You know, everybody out there is a voter, and you're hoping they're a listener, a viewer, whatever it may be. And so politicians will want to be on podcasts. They'll want to be on radio. They'll want to be on television, because that gives them the chance to communicate directly to their constituents, their voters. So if you work in one of these organizations, odds are you're going to have a chance to meet and talk to people. You know, when I think about it, I did get to meet Clinton. I remember shooting film, news film, before we had videotape of Jimmy Carter on the Delta Queen at 2 o'clock in the morning in the Canton, Missouri lock and dam.
Wow.
You do get a chance to rub elbows with famous people and interesting people. But those aren't the only ones. There are just so many, you know, everything is a story. I remember when I first got into news, I was working summer. I don't think I was yet at Quincy College at the time. But one of our editors gave me a story out of the Miami Herald newspaper. And it was 4 pages long, and there's never a story that's 4 pages long. And it was a story of a guy who had lived in Miami, he died at age 65 or something. Mm-hmm. It was a story of his life. And the only reason they printed this story was to show how interesting everyone's life is.
Yeah.
And it was. I mean, it was riveting to read, and I'm sure it took them hours to put together, but it points out that everybody is a story or has a story, and I'll never forget that.
Yeah, no, that's great.
It was fun. It was a wonderful article and a wonderful lesson for me.
Yeah, that's very inspiring. Going on the inspiring thing with with new students coming into media, our first intro into it is usually through technology, and we have to find people through reaching out through them in email, social media, that kind of stuff. When you first got into the business, how did that operation kind of work? Like, how did you get people to interview? How did you find stories? What equipment were you working on?
It's television and newspaper were really different. Newspaper worked ahead. You'd have what they called the morning budget meeting, and they would be working ahead on, okay, what are we doing 2 weeks from now, whatever. TV, it was like we'd sit down and say, okay, what are we going to do today?
Yeah.
Other than the obvious things of like the senator's going to be in town today or the Dogwood Festival's on today or whatever. So you'd work closely with an assignment editor probably in your organization or a news editor to discuss what you thought were the topics of the day. And then you would try to logically figure out who are people who could speak to authoritatively on these subjects. And if it was a controversial story, well, who do we find somebody from this side? And then how do we find somebody from the other side? So you just kind of walk through it and think it through. You said you used the word truth a few minutes ago, and I think that's really the thing that scares me the most is that in some organizations, they lose the threat of the fact that the job here is to be impartial. If you're talking about news, the job is to be impartial and present the various sides of the story and let the viewer, the listener, whomever, make up his or her own mind about what they believe and what they think. But I see a lot more interjection of opinion by those who are gathering the facts, and their interjection isn't facts, it's their opinion. And if it's an opinion show, that's fine, but if it's a news show, I struggle with that. So that concerns me a little.
Yeah, how do news stations stuff address that nowadays?
Well, I think good television stations and radio stations deal with it, and they deal with social media in the same way. They apply the same rules, and that's impartiality. That's let's be able to tell the story impartially and fairly if it's of interest to and is of interest to our public, and you try to interview the people who are impacted by either have an impact on or impacted by whatever the story may be, and I don't think that principle has really changed.
Yeah.
And I don't think as television stations and radio stations stream and go online and take advantage of social media, I don't think that should change.
Yeah.
There's a real difference between news gathering and news presentation and opinion. And so I don't think for most good traditional media organizations, regardless of the technology they use it, they don't see those rules changing.
Yeah. I think the closer you get to community level when it comes to broadcasting, that impartialness stands out more. But when you start going up towards the top, it starts to be skewed one way or the other.
It depends. It depends on what you watch and what you hear and what you listen to. When I look at some of the video sources for alleged news, both on the right and the left, I just shake my head like, that's not news. That's somebody's opinion, and they're trying to move someone in that direction. And I don't consider that news. And sometimes, even in my outrage of it all, I think back to the fact that there have been various times in our society where it has been different. If you go back into the 1850s, and the Quincy Herald-Whig newspaper then was, there were several newspapers in Quincy. There was the Quincy Herald, and there was the Quincy Whig, and there were some, the Daily Journal, and there were some other ones. But the Lincoln-Douglas debate was held down, you know, in Washington Park, which was then John Square, I think, in 1850, whatever. And just for the record, I was not alive in 1850, whatever. Thank you. But anyway, if you read the Quincy Herald, you're on the front page, the news coverage, Lincoln was a genius and a great orator, and Stephen Douglas was an idiot. Conversely, if you went to the Whig, Stephen Douglas was a great guy and a great orator, and Lincoln was a big, tall, bumbling fool. So there have been times in life where journalism wasn't quite as straightforward as it has been most of my life, but I think that's an interesting point.
Yeah. Do you think, so recently the coronavirus, you know, affected the world and how news got shared. Do you think it would have been better to report it back when it was only newspaper or back when it was dominantly radio and TV?
No. I think, and this is where social media shines, be it news or information, whatever you want to call it, because of the instantaneous ability to communicate, people became aware of the coronavirus much more quickly and also information about how to deal with it and whatever. I just, you know, a million people have been killed in this country. You know, my guess is it would have been many more. It's just like if you go back and look at the natural disasters in this country over the past, or in the world for that matter, over the last 100 years, you'll see that most of the greatest with loss of life were years ago, and that's because people couldn't get communicate to. The largest, I think, natural disaster in terms of loss of life in this country was the hurricane in Corpus Christi, Texas, in like, I don't know, 1890 or whenever it was. Well, it was just a function of they didn't know it was coming. Well, you know they're coming now.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where, no, you'd be far better off today because of the communication.
Wow, that's the first time someone's given me that perspective on it. That's
great. You don't talk to very many old people. There you go.
I started getting you know other reporters who worked at KHQA, and they're like, you know, it would have been better back when we first started. It would have been opinions on it.
I agree about the opinion part, but in terms of getting the communication out, it's instantaneous and it's pretty comprehensive. So no, absolutely, if we have, knock on wood, disasters and whatever, we're better off today. You just hope that the people who are reporting it are responsible.
Yeah. Forgive me if this is too politically relevant, but with Ukraine and stuff, do you think that social media coverage has made it like a different kind of conflict than it would have been if there was only official reporting? Because we do get, we've got eyes on the ground in many different ways. A lot of times it's debunked as like old footage or from something else, but some of the footage is real that comes through from people on the ground.
I'm probably a little prejudiced as a consumer of traditional media more so than social media.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, that there's the good and there's the bad in social media for this or other things. On the one hand, I mean, what's different than take Germany in the 30s with Hitler or any other type of thing, or various things that have happened over the in our lifetimes, in my lifetime? You've got, as I view it, and I suppose this is my opinion, Russia is controlling the media for its citizens.
Right.
The government is, which is a god-awful thing, in my view. That was no different in 1950 or 60 or 70 when, you know, when people used to have coups, the first thing they did was take over the radio station or take over the TV station.
Yeah, of course.
And so to a degree with state-run media, state-controlled media, that's no different. And they can manipulate social media however they want to, and it's a little over my head. But to me, that's no different. The beauty of social media today, but also I think traditional media, is when you see the horrific things that have occurred in Ukraine, you hope that it spurs in the world, and I think it has, an outrage. Now, you can't just go in and say, well, we're going to deal with this. We're going to clean this up. There's a lot of geopolitical stuff that you got to figure out.
Yeah, it's not really about, like, stopping it when I ask a question. It's more like when the war with Iraq happened, you know, it's there was TV coverage of it, but it was very patriotically driven because of 9/11. People were fired up about defending the United States. So there wasn't a lot of that alternate opinion of, like, of social media where it's like, well, what about these people and these people? Because now it seems when conflicts start or things change, everyone knows about it, and it's a bigger issue politically for people. Like, they can't get away with that stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I guess as I have watched the coverage, I think it's been somewhat the same as in past things. I mean, the difference when you compare it to certain things, compare it to 9/11. 9/11 happened on our shore, Pearl Harbor, which I also like to point out, it was not yet born.
of course.
You know, that was on our shore. That was in our country. And so I think it was perhaps a little bit different. But the outrage that what's happening in Ukraine has caused is a good thing. And I think because of the ability of free media, be it social or otherwise, is helping the world understand, you know, how difficult things are with Russia. It's hard to fathom that the people of Russia really support what's going on for the most part. And my guess is they don't, but the story they're getting from their state-run media is a very one-sided, pointed, opinionated thing.
Yeah.
That I think if they watched what you and I see, it might be a lot different.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Perspective changes everything. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it does.
I know coronavirus is too recent. 9/11 was a big news coverage thing, but that's like more of a national thing. Was there been any big stories about Quincy that got covered by a lot of people that you remember, like some big events or disasters?
The one that would come immediately to mind was the flood of 1993.
Of course.
Yeah. And when you think about the impact it had on the region and a larger region and also the world, every bridge that crossed the Mississippi River from the Quad Cities to St. Louis was inoperable because the levees were breached. And Quincy was open for a long time, and finally it was breached. As you may recall from the story, a guy pulled a sandbag and he later went to prison, so on and so forth. But that probably, in terms of impacting people, when you realize that 38% of the people who work in Quincy every day come from Missouri, and I'm sure there are a lot of people go the other way too, all of a sudden that one-mile trip turned into a 100-mile trip, or there were helicopters that took people back and forth, which actually occurred. That probably got as much coverage nationally and internationally than anything, and the impact it had on people here. But also, at the end of the day, there were things about that retrospectively that were important to this region. The region came to realize how much we depended on one another.
Yeah.
And so I think the collaboration during that flood has spilled over, I guess I shouldn't use water terms, spilled over into even today, that the river is seen more as a connector as opposed to a divider.
Wow. That's a great moral lesson to come out of that.
Well, there was, really. It really truly was and is, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm not making fun of you. It's my hometown, Jefferson City, you're familiar with it. It flooded a few years ago, just a couple summers ago, and the whole community came out to help clean up and things like that.
So, sure.
it does bring people together, and I think the media is a big part of that, you know.
Well, I mean, if you think back to the 1993 flood, the center, one of the center places was QU Stadium. And every day you would drive by there and you'd see dozens of people, if not hundreds of people, in the parking lot filling sandbags.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, most of those people, their houses weren't getting flooded or whatever. They were just, you know, pitching in.
Yeah.
And that's where media makes such a difference, because we were able to put out the call to action.
Yeah.
And people responded to it. So it's really, there's a real chain to all of this.
Yeah. Do you have you often had to call people to action in that way with the news, or?
I don't think that dramatically necessarily, but sure. I mean, if somebody or some organization needs help, you know, when the United Way has its annual drive, you know, we cover it, we make people aware of it, and hopefully that spurs people to be involved to give money. So you know, that's a constant ongoing thing, I think, for media. But I can't think of one that would really match the flood in terms of its immediacy or its scope.
Yeah, just anything that you feel like people need to hear, if that makes sense.
Well, there's a, you know, one of the things to me that's scary about social media is what we used to call water cooler stories. You know, and the next day people would go to work or they'd come to school and they'd hang around the water cooler and they'd say, hey, did you see this show last night or did you see this story or whatever? Well, now, on the one hand, the diversity has increased dramatically of what people watch or whatever, so there's probably less, you know, you can say to people, well, you know, did you watch, I can't think of the name, Bridgerton last night? Mm. I've never seen Bridgerton.
Yeah.
Ever.
And, I haven't either.
You know, that would have never been the case in the old days of traditional media. Mm-hmm. Well, it lessens somewhat of a common bond in us. And so I think, you know, part of that's fine, but part of it's not fine.
Yeah.
And that's really kind of where society has to come together, because not that you and I have to have the same opinion, but having some of the same experiences is a good thing.
Yeah, it definitely seems now with the how much is kind of pushed on us with social media when it comes to news, news ideology, basically. There's, you know, right, left, and they'll push these ideas on you. It used to be they were presented, and because of your life experiences, you would choose what you believed and where to go, and it was usually very reasonable, you know, you'd think it through. Now it is, you're bombarded with all this and kind of forced into one side of reasoning. If you try to pick this middle bit, the impartial person, everyone will just kind of push you onto the other side and not take you seriously, you know? Like, if I'm in the middle, let's say, and I'm discussing something that was kind of center, but a right-leaning person would see it as left, and left person see it as right, because it's all very extreme these days.
Right. And
so the pressure is now, at least it seems to me, that it's coming more from the media, like, because there's so, not traditional media, but social media getting pushed it on you, as opposed to back in the day where it was really up to you what you'd, if you wanted to believe something, I guess.
Well, I think the ethics of social media, it's different than. We're still in the Wild West. I mean, social media has really been around, you know, a generation, and it takes a while for things to evolve and what kind of oversight there is, what kind of laws exist, that sort of thing. But you're right. Our society has become so polarized, and you know, whether it's the people on social media or to a degree some politicians. I mean, politicians are somewhat reactionary. If you're in a Republican primary, for example, and you live in a district that is way conservative, and you have a competitor in that primary, you're going to try to be the most conservative of those two people. Same thing would be true on the liberal side as well. Mm-hmm. But as a result of that, it's really created kind of a polarizing effect, and I don't think that's necessarily good for society. And you're right, the people in the middle are becoming less and less of a factor, but yet traditionally in this republic over the last 200 whatever number of years it is to be elected in the general, you need to be able to serve the largest to get enough voters. You have to appeal really to both sides.
Yeah.
But now it's just they've gotten so far out. It's just it's hard to fathom and sometimes hard to watch.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. So you will be on a panel talking about social media ethics. And you were talking with Nora earlier about it. So do you think that having that sort of editorial nature that traditional media had, if we applied that to social media, would that make it better to kind of weed through all the?
I think it would. You know, I think what's different today. Yes, it would. To answer your question, I think. And, you know, that you get into government intervention, and there are a lot of factors in all of this. But if those same, you know, traditional media who is also involved in social media applies the same business practices, you know, is it impartial? Are we doing this fairly? Is it of interest to the public? So if everybody approached it that way, that's fine. But not everyone on social media is doing that.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big part of the challenge. And then I really think it's incumbent upon the recipients to educate themselves about using social media, and is it opinion, is it fact, is it whatever? Mm. Because it's not going to all of a sudden overnight be all great, pristine information on social media, so people have to be smart enough. And I think it comes to schools to educate people. Listen, you know, for places that are supposed to be so open for thought, colleges and universities today are some of the worst. And when it comes to someone coming on campus, they'll bring someone on campus who might have a conservative point of view or a liberal point of view, and people will yell them down.
Mm.
And that just outrages me. I mean, you don't have to agree with them, but, you know, part of it is letting ideas be heard and then making your judgment.
Yeah, but use logic and reason to, if they're incorrect, use logic and reason.
Yeah, and give them a chance to speak. But but it's, you know, I wish that, I hope that students understand, you know, that getting differing points of view is a good thing, but then make their own decisions. But then as they formulate their decisions, hopefully we'll have learned and heard from people who are credible and knowledgeable and so on and so forth. So but we're still in the Wild West on social media.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with what you said, where when it comes to universities, being reactionary like that, like, oh, someone they don't agree with, just yelling them down. I think people in the communication department have a unique experience, because we're taught those traditional, like, no, double check, you know, don't just have an opinion and not get the facts first,
right.
Always investigate people, you know. And so it becomes so much easier once you have that education, that knowledge to be doing that, to be more in the middle and reasonable and willing to speak with people instead of at them, you know.
Yeah.
The people who close themselves off, they're the ones who are usually yelling the loudest. So, yeah, I think that those are the good values of being in the communication department now. You know, you learn these early.
Well, the things that anyone says on social media, you know, immediately hit a larger audience because of the technology. I mean, if you and I were sitting in a bar right now at the table, and I said, you know, Bobby's an idiot, whoever Bobby is, and we'll assume he's an idiot, but that's my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, that's me. I said it to you. I said it to one person. Now, you may elect to go tell other people that Ralph said Bobby's an idiot, but, you know, you're going to see 5 people, 4 people, 3 people, 7 people. If we're doing that on social media and I call Bobby an idiot, it just reaches a much broader world, and people are, you know, and all it is my opinion, and my opinion may well be way wrong.
Yeah.
But it just, all of a sudden, it becomes far more inflammatory far more quickly.
Yeah, you see those stories constantly now. Just one person saying one thing and everyone knows about it.
And then it becomes, at some point, theoretical fact. And the other thing is, you know, stuff is out there forever. You know,
of course,
the one thing that people forget, too, is, you know, if something as bad is said about somebody, be it true or not, you know, you see lives ruined because that story is out there forever. And you Google that person's name 50 years from now, and it's still going to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all permanent there on the internet, of yep. course. I think people are finally sort of figuring that out, but cause it is the wild, like you said. So people have gone as far as they can, when it comes to opinions or what they can do on the internet, you know, and you can even see that now with, I think that's been spreading even to traditional news, like, or at least national news, where they're trying bigger stunts. They're saying more outlandish things, or they're taking more polar sides. So yeah, it's all, you can see that happening firsthand. Definitely. All right. So we got to wrap up here. Sure. I wanted to end with one last question.
Sure.
So what are you currently doing? I understand you're on the board member here at Quincy.
Right.
What else are you doing?
We sold the company in August.
Yeah.
So it's been a few months, and I'm kind of getting my feel for what this retirement thing feels like. But I've gone back on the board at Quincy University. I was on the board for 10 years back in the 90s, and I was the chair of the board for 5 years. And
oh, wow.
I've just gone back on. I'm also volunteering my time at the university, particularly in advancement and fundraising, because I think that's an area where I can help. And it's always, schools always need money. That's just how it yeah. works. But so that's a great deal of my time. And I'm a father and a grandparent, and I get my fair amount of babysitting in. So
yeah.
So it's a good combination of things. But, you know, Quincy University has been such a critical part of our region for 122 years, I guess it is. But beyond that, when I think about the experiences I had here and others I know who've attended here, I hope you and your colleagues feel the same way, that Quincy University is providing a great springboard in education, especially given the liberal arts nature of things, that it will help you all in your future. And I just, you know, I know how good it was for me and for others, and so I want to do everything I can to support that going forward.
Yeah, that we greatly appreciate sure. it, of course. Do you have any last advice for new people getting into the communication department?
I think, you know, just being sure... Follow your passion, I think, is what I would say.
Of course.
And if communications or various parts within communications are your passion, then I would encourage you to stay with it. But look at some of the traditional morals and some of the traditions, because even in new media, they stick today and they're time tested. Again, what we're really talking about to a degree is just a delivery system.
Yeah.
It's like a faster car
yeah.
that'll do more stuff, but that still means you got to drive safely.
Of course. Yeah. Wow. Good advice. Thank
okay.
you, sir.
Sure,
thank
you're
you.
Welcome.
All right. Thank you for listening, everybody. This has been another episode of the QU Podcast. Interested in listening to more podcasts, please go on to qumedia.com and check us out. Thank you.